Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's new Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson here at SecureSat Studios here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Today we have the privilege all the way from the lovely United Kingdom, Mr. Mike Loganoff, who is a global CISO, currently the interim client advisory at Control Risk. Mike, welcome.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Indeed, we were just talking before we came on regarding the bleak midwinter as it sets in there in England. does that help hasten Christmas for you?
Well, it certainly feels like it's not too far away. And, it's definitely bleak. Not much snow around, but certainly
sure.
Plenty of cold, dark rain. But as I was saying, we're in the depths of a cold political climate right now.
Indeed.
Well. So let's not go there.
Indeed, definitely not. The airwaves get too much of that anyway. So tell us, Mike, how did you arrive at your sort of stature as a cybersecurity professional with CISO and the writing and other things?
Well, I've been in the security game for quite a long time now, since I was 17, actually, when I joined the military.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
A good number of years in the military working in secure communications. So
sure.
I actually trained as an engineer there, a technician. And kind of evolved from there through setting up my own business when I left the Royal Air Force. I'm moving into security and doing security consultancy. For the last 15 years now, I've been running my own company called the Ascot Barclay Cybersecurity
mm-hmm.
Group.
Mm-hmm.
As part of that, the work that I do there, I work with the global organizations as an international chief information security officer. So I work for some large FTSE 250 companies. Formerly, I was the global chief cybersecurity strategist for Hewlett Packard,
sure.
HP, but also CISO for companies like Avon Cosmetics, Unipark Group. I've worked with GSK on the operational technology security side of things, Sky Broadcasting, so
sure.
Across different industries, including government. Working with the police and serious organized crime agency there, breaking up international crime gangs, online crime gangs. So really some hands-on experience of managing risk on the internet. And as I say, I've been CEO of my own company for the last 15 years or so now, or approaching 15 years.
Well, I would say you've probably seen quite then, as I've observed, such a dramatic evolution from the days when we didn't even know what cybercrime was or how to articulate it, or didn't even have necessarily laws in place to now at least having some better awareness. Have we improved much?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think the landscape itself has got more sophisticated, and you know, our adversaries have gotten better at what they
sure.
do. They've got more targeted, more focused. So, you know, as the threat landscape has kind of evolved, so have the adversaries, and hence the job of the CISO also has become more complex. And so, you know, we're asked to cover a lot of ground now. It's not getting any easier.
Yeah.
The threat landscape grows. As I say, we're not just looking at the issue of IT security or information security. We are looking at some of the threats that face our business management systems, as well as the operational technology side of things. So everything is becoming much more interconnected with the advent of IoT, the Internet of Things, and the industrial Internet of Things. So bring that all together and you've got a very complex landscape, threat landscape.
Sure, and you've seen such a diversity of industries, both from the way the government operates, from the way that even the military operates separate from the government, and then moving into sort of the commercial sector. How did you outfit yourself from a training perspective? What were the what were the key components to build up sort of your resume to achieve some of these things?
Sure. I've done a number of training courses. I think most of my training has been hands-on at the coalface,
sure,
acting as a CISO, but I trained as a certified CISO with EC Council a good number of years ago. I've trained at the SANS Institute doing the their training on industrial control system security,
sure,
and that side of things, which gives me good depth there. I've trained with ISACA, and done the CISM exams, the CISM, and I've trained at Harvard University doing their cybersecurity leadership program, as well as a number of McAfee training courses as well. So on the academic side, I think those are kind of tick boxes that you've got to do in order to just give you that that depth for organizations to feel that you've got a credible academic background.
Yeah, in addition to that hands-on, for sure. Let's take a quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And this is Abe Thompson here back at SecureSat Studios in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. I've got Mike Lognov, who is our guest today. Mike, we were just talking about how you checked a number of the boxes academically, but then you also had a robust hands-on learning experience to kind of get where you are. And certainly, as you now sit from your position and look at employing people in the industry, particularly as you look also at the training pipelines available for CISOs, what is the sort of the spectrum look like for all of them to kind of get to where you are? Because I know we have a lot of listeners that are interested in the industry. So,
well, it's a great question again. I've actually written a book on this.
Excellent.
So allow me to just briefly plug my book.
Please do.
It answers a question that in a lot more detail than I can do in this particular short conversation. So
yes,
do look it up on Amazon, CISO, Defenders of the Cyber Realm. It has a foreword by Vint Cerf. He's a very famous guy.
Indeed.
Founder of the internet, along with Bob Kahn. So he was very kind enough to read the book and the manuscript prior to me launching it and give his view and feedback and help position some of the messaging. So, so in there, you'll find a lot about what being a CISO is all about and the different types of CISO, or CISO, as you tend to call it in the US.
Yeah.
You say tomato, you say tomato. So I'll continue
CISO. Yeah, I like CISO myself. Maybe it was my time in Britain working with the Royal Air Force and GCHQ. So.
Okay, well, here we go. So we'll stick with CISO in this case. But in here I talk about the different types of CISOs, and a lot of guys in this industry come from a very technical background. And that's reflected in the CISO community, I think. Although now more and more, as per your earlier question, I think we're moving to more of a strategic position now, as well as the operational type CISOs that are out there and the advisory. So those are the four types of chief information security officers that I tend to come across in the industry. So there's the technician, the operational guy, the strategist, or the advisory type CISO. Myself, I tend to focus more at a strategic advisory level these days, so working with nation states and large organizations across industry and government to implement a robust, all-encompassing cybersecurity strategy.
Well, and I like the model, and I've talked with some others about this, about that layering of sort of mentorship and statesmanship that can gather around the CISOs of the world to provide that advisory support. Do you feel like the CISOs that you're seeing come out today are being sufficiently trained and prepared, or is that part of what you're answering in your book?
it is part of what I seek to answer in the book, certainly. You know, in interviewing the CISOs that I did for the book and the various people across different industries, it became very clear that what we're being asked to do is very wide, very disparate. You know, there was about 900 different categories that we built into a mind map, you know, and that was just capturing all the things that people said they were doing on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, it's complex. We can't all be great at all of those components. So really matching the skill set and the experience with the maturity of a client is kind of important in getting the right chief information security officer in place.
Absolutely.
And I do see that, you know, the level of robustness and the level of support that an organization puts into its cybersecurity is quite often directly related to the skills and the expertise of the chief information security officer. I find myself quite often having to fight for budgets.
Sure.
I'm having to sell cybersecurity. I'm having to get the board to buy into it in order to lay out, you know, the appropriate environment to defend that organization.
Sure.
And that's even in organizations, by the way, that have had serious breaches.
Wow.
You know, which was for me also a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
You know, I've been working with organizations who have suffered from fairly significant ransom attacks, for example. I won't mention any names here, but, you know, there have been incidences where these organizations have been brought to their knees practically.
Yes.
And almost gone out of business as a result of their files being encrypted or their business processes being interrupted or whatever measure those, you know, the adversarial guys have taken in order to set that attack up. So,
sure.
You know, even in those circumstances, the CISO still got to go in and work pretty hard to bring it all together and make sure everybody's aligned to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Sure. Now, you know, obviously that clearly points to the fact that a lot hinges on that position and that individual. And given the pushback that you've kind of been talking about that CISOs often face, and also the sort of the level of sobriety and severity that rests on their head, you know, potentially, what is it that would motivate someone to want to be a CISO today? I mean, with all that pressure, with all that potential challenge, what is it, though, that would still lead someone to, and like yourself, to enter into that fray? What makes it worth it for you?
Well, it's again, a great question. You're asking some great questions this afternoon. It's one that I've asked a lot of my colleagues. You know, why do we continue to do this?
Sure.
Given the fact that you know, we're still not perceived at being at board level. CISOs are not perceived at being at board level.
Even though they are. Yeah.
Yeah, there's very few that operate at that level. We're generally reporting into CIOs, COOs, chief risk officers. You know, so they're kind of one or two tiers down generally across industry. You know, I'm pushing hard to change that paradigm. And again, the book is very much about that. And my view is that, you know, I'm responsible for ensuring that the cash in the business continues to operate and come in, whereas a chief financial officer, for example, is there to ensure that, you know, the funds are used appropriately and, and spent well, etc. So I kind of see and position the CISO role very much alongside that of the chief financial officer, with two slightly different remits, but, you know, two that really need to work together. And I'd much prefer to see us operating at that level.
True.
I think in certain parts of the world, in Germany, for example, more and more CISOs are now reporting directly into the CEO because you know, they're taking the risk a bit more seriously. So it's a general statement, but I think we've got a lot of work to do to really elevate the role to where it needs to be.
Well, and a lot of compliance and regulation, at least here, dictates that there must be a separation of those duties. Is that similarly enforced in sort of the EU or the sort of the European environment right now?
Yeah, there's more and more legislation coming in into this space, and we have a lot of directives that came in the summertime with GDPR, which was really about ensuring that information and data is properly looked after, properly stored, encrypted where it needs to be, and some of the rights with citizen around how their private information is stored, how long it's stored for, and how it's deleted. So yeah, there's more and more legislation coming in. However, I trained also as a data protection officer and certified as a data protection officer.
Yeah.
And you know, the interesting thing is that even since that legislation's coming, I don't get a lot of work in that space.
Yeah.
Phone's not ringing off the hoop saying, can you make
sure that... they don't know what they don't know yet, right?
Yeah, our GDPR is sound and where it needs to be. Where I think the lawyers have picked up most of the business thus far, certainly.
Sure.
Hearing companies are GDPR compliant.
And as I understand, the UK is going to retain the GDPR, you know, regardless of the outcome of the separation from the EU.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. On the basis that happens, because we're on the eve of an election tomorrow, so depending on the outcome of that as to whether we stay or go, we'll see. But the overriding feeling is that we will maintain GDPR legislation moving forward, because we're going to continue to work with our European partners.
Keep the prudent parts, yeah, for sure.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
What are some of the particular issues then, just even apart from achieving the position, but what have been some of those seminal moments that have defined your career as a CISO, and kind of what do you see in the future in terms of specific cybersecurity issues?
Let me start with the second part of the question. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned earlier sort of the evolving threat landscape, and we're seeing the growth of new technologies coming along. Those technologies getting smaller and smaller. So we're moving into the world of nanotechnology.
Yeah.
For example, we're seeing the growth of robots. We're seeing artificial intelligence. We're seeing machine learning. So, you know, if you speak to or listen to Elon Musk, for example, you know, he would demonstrate a reasonable amount of caution with regards to the direction that we're moving in, with regards to robotics, AI, and that world. And it is an area that concerns me too as a Chief Information Security Officer, in terms of how we regulate and control that growth moving forward. I'm fortunate enough to be working in some areas with some governments that are really got a finger on the pulse in terms of developing, you know, future megacities and developing new platforms for the future, which embrace all of those new technologies. And it's my job to help just oversee those aspects from a security perspective, from a cybersecurity perspective, certainly, but also looking at physical security and other aspects as well. So that's the scary part, I have to say.
You know,
lots of unknowns there, and being human beings, we do what we do, we charge forward. And just launch stuff, new products, new software, new applications, without really too much thought on the implications to society moving forward. So we need a lot more focus on how we manage and regulate that whole aspect, as well as how we control it to ensure that it's working in the best possible manner for the human race moving forward. I would probably summarize it a bit like climate change. Climate change is happening whether we like it or not, you know, it's all around us, or whether we believe in it or not. And it's a bit like with technology and the advancement of AI and those components, it will just happen. So we do need to embrace it sooner rather than later and just really understand what it is we're doing and the direction that's all moving in.
Well, it also kind of highlights the philosophy and the need to to remember that cybersecurity is not just this department sat off over by itself. You know, its ramifications need to be implemented across development, engineering, logistics, financial, all of those other things. How do we keep from being relegated, you know, like some of those poor football teams that often happens in the UK?
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't think, you know, with the amount of attacks that are happening, the growth of more targeted phishing attacks, spear phishing attacks on organizations, potentially with the bigger fines from the regulators, like the Information Commissioner's Officer on organizations such as British Airways and Experian and those types of companies who have suffered from significant breaches. I think that kind of all highlights the plight for Chief Information Security Officer and organizations moving forward, that it'll be costly to them and hit the bottom line if they are non-compliant. So compliance usually helps drive forward better controls, and you know, so hopefully we should be optimistic on that front that you know, it'll be taken a lot more seriously moving forward.
Sure. Well, and we know that it's never gonna, while the AI zealots may think that it will, you know, rule the world one day, we know that it's certainly never gonna replace the human element and the proactive side that comes from the human mind. Is that a battle you think continues to be waged?
Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly I would never, as a senior leader in an organization, and, you know, entirely trust, you know, that 20 to 40% of intrusions and things that aren't going to be picked up by your traditional automated capabilities. There is something unique about the sentient human mind that has been demonstrated over and over again. Certainly technology and the automation and AI are a force multiplier, but hopefully that train isn't too far down the road.
Well, it's perception, you know, it's a question of perception, I
sure
think, and belief. And how far off it is in terms of getting to the point of singularity, or, you know, machines being ahead of human beings and being able to make decisions on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, the scary point, is that flip. You know, that could be 50 years away, 500 years, or some would say it's probably 20 years away. You know, so in the next 15, 20 years, we'll see such dramatic advancements in this area that, you know, we've really got to be, in my view, a bit careful and not be too complacent and
right,
sit back and think that, you know, as sentient beings, that we've got that, we're actually in control over all of that stuff. Because the problem in this space is, and with regulation generally, is that regulation usually comes in after the fact, when, you know, the public are demanding perhaps some controls around something that's gone wrong. Or
after the crisis, yeah.
Know your customer and anti-money laundering and all those type of things have taken years to put in place, and usually after the fact, when, you know, although the damage has been done, we can't afford to do that. I don't believe in the world of AI,
yeah,
and machine learning. So, you know, whilst I'm like you, I'm hopeful and optimistic that we won't hit that barrier, I do think that it's a healthy thing to do what CISOs do, which is think about what are the risks,
yeah,
should the, you know, the other side, the dark side of that come about.
Right.
And what controls do we put in place to safeguard the human race?
Yeah. Well, and you talked about that a bit when you mentioned IoT in the beginning. That's just another example of this voracious appetite that we have to, you know, put technology into everything, you know, and thereby increasing exponentially the risk. You know, when my refrigerator and my typewriter and my, you know, now my toilet or can talk to the internet.
Yeah, so I've just lost sound. I don't know if you're still there.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Still here.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying internet connection is a bit unstable there. So
yeah.
I missed the last part of that, but if I understood it, you were talking about IoT and
right,
your fridge and various other amenities around the house, if I may put it that way.
Right, right, right.
And I think, you know, those are all big things. I think for me, once we start to get into the realms of nanotechnologies, you know, we get into omnipotent computing where, you know, we're using carbon technology, which is trackable and traceable.
Right.
And so everything that you touch, everything that moves, everything that's built, everything that's made potentially is trackable and traceable. You know, and that brings with it some interesting privacy as well as security issues.
Well, and you know, obviously, as you probably know, the UK and Europe have actually done a better job of seeking to protect individual privacy now with GDPR and some other things, where you'd think that, you know, with the sort of the individualistic mindset here in America, that we would have led the way in that. And yet, you know, we're now doing some catch up and learning from that approach, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain countries around the world, certain nation states that are more advanced in certain aspects than other aspects. Mm-hmm. But, you know, equally, there are a lot of adversary groups, you know, APT, teams that are operating out there with state backing, and those guys are pretty good at what they do as well.
Sure.
So, you know, we can't sit back on our laurels either. You know, my job is as a CISO, really thinking about risk and managing risk.
Yeah. Whatever it might be, right?
Yeah, across different types of industries and from different perspectives. You know,
sure.
As we said earlier, it could be from a technical perspective, it might be from a human factors perspective, even from compromised individuals. So when compromised the sysadmin side, how that, you know, is going to achieve an outcome if I'm a bad guy, well, you know, that's something we've got to think about and defend against. So that whole insider risk as well as the external risks that we're talking about need to be given due consideration.
So if you would put yourself in the chair of the chief executive officer and maybe the chief operations officer as they deliberate about that one in whom they will place their faith on the CISO side. Who is that person? What do they look like? What signals do they give you that build your confidence to want to hire them as your CISO?
Well, again, it really depends on the maturity of a particular organization. Mm. So the first thing I would encourage any organization to do is to conduct a cybersecurity maturity assessment. So we look at what we currently have in place. Much of it is down to the risk appetite for that particular organization. And what is it they have that could be considered the crown jewels that perhaps an adversarial team would want to get a hold of, you know, whether that's disruption,
sure,
or whether it's financial or some other, you know, reason. So it's really about understanding that organization and then from that, being able to define and select the right individual to meet that criteria. So,
sure,
you know, is it a strategic CISO who can drive the needs, the requirements, and tease out the risk appetite for that organization and get the board and the CEO and the other, you know, executives on board with understanding why it's important to protect against certain types of risks and certain assets within their business. And I think, you know, that's key. And the skill set in doing that doesn't necessarily come from a very technical background.
Right.
So, you know, as a CISO, having the right blend of skills, the right business background, because I'm quite finding that most of the roles I'm engaged in are much more focused on enabling the business rather than enabling technology, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, it's not about the technology anymore. We know many companies have gone out there, spent zillions and billions of dollars on implementing tin and tools and software, and yet they still get hacked.
Right.
So, you know, it is important to have the right technology in place, but there are so many other factors that come into play as well. And getting a good holistic approach across the organization, the ecosystem that a company works within, you know, its supply chain, there's much more to it than a simple answer, to be quite honest.
Sure.
So a good CISO is somebody who is, well, enthusiastic, open-minded, slightly technical, strategic focused, business-minded, hard-headed.
Yep.
In terms of being able to take a kicking and press forward, totally committed to the objective of ensuring that organization is protected, understanding that, you know, nothing's going to happen on my watch. I'm going to make sure this organization is defended. And if I've got to internally kick ass to do that and make myself unpopular in some cases, then that's what I'll have to do. You know, and that's
sure.
generally the brief that I'm given. You know, it's usually come in, shake this up, make sure we are secure.
Yeah.
Reporting to a CEO in order to do that, you may have concerns about the level of security across his organization and how seriously it's been taken. So, you know, they hire somebody like me to come in and shake the tree and make sure that robust processes and practices are put in. So short answer is it depends on the environment, the people, the culture, and matching the right individual to the role and requirement.
Well, we're
apologies.
Oh, well, no, but it's perfect, and it's something that we in this industry, I think, are used to by now, is not always being the most popular guy in the room, but that's a worthy calling if it leads to the appropriate defense and the appropriate change that needs to happen in an organization. And so,
I'd say so. I think if it's all about being popular. And it's not because much of what I do is change and transformation. Change and transformation, is disruptive by its very nature.
Sure.
We know that people don't like to change and don't like to transform. Yeah. So, I'm seeking to implement a much more secure and transform to a much more secure environment. And I've got to bring people with me. I've got to bring the hearts and minds, but at the same time, you've got to have an edge to you that says, look, we're doing this for a reason, and get on the bus, as Jim Collins would say, or get off and do something else. So I'm very committed to ensuring that people's jobs are protected overall, because the bottom line is, if the company is taken down and taken out, then those guys ain't going to have too much employment moving forward. So, I'm very passionate about what I do. And therefore, I have a great belief in delivering the outcomes that need to be delivered. And I think that kind of edge is definitely necessary. That plus never being complacent. I think the other side of it is never thinking you've arrived at a secure place.
Right.
So whatever security you put in place is never enough.
Right.
It would be pragmatic, but it works within the realms, the boundaries of the organization, the funding that you have, the resources you have. But it's about maximizing those to reduce the risk as best you can for
an
organization.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Loganoff is the author of CISO, Defenders of the Cyber Realm. He is certainly a font of knowledge and experience. There's that book if you're watching on the video feed. He's a font of knowledge, just a lot of great experience. Definitely enjoy listening to you, and I'm even learning as I'm sitting here. Mike, it's been a delight to have you with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was great. And if you ever wanted to do it again, I'm always here.
Indeed we shall. This is Abe Thompson coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. Good day.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.